From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing in Dallas, and joining me is Mr. John Grace in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And in the wild outback of Australia, we've got Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, I need coffee, and you can get stuff for make me watch this film.
Also joining us in the Cecil Hotel on Skid Row in Los Angeles, we've got Mr. Eric Zaldivar. Say hello, Eric.
Stu's giving the game away early, I guess.
It might be a decoy, Eric.
That'd be good.
Stu has played games before.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a Scorpio. I do that. I play my Scorpio star sign for that.
It's amazing you haven't gone into jail for the time you were born, Stu. For your sign. Yeah,
I know.
A little right. Esoteric.
Yeah. All right. So, the movie we're doing today is The Parallax View, directed by Alan J. Pakula, written by the great Lorenzo Simple Jr., who you might know from the Batman TV series. It stars Warren Beatty, the great Warren Beatty, and the only thing about this movie that's really aged is his hairdo, I think. Who picked this movie? I don't know. Was it who? I can't remember.
I picked it.
This was picked when I was still missing, so I am.
I picked it to bring Stuart back. Ooh, irony.
You picked this to bring me back.
Yeah, yes, I want answers.
We're trying to organize shows that you can participate in. I go, can you watch The Parallax View? Because we were thinking about doing that.
What is wrong with you, man? Honestly, why would you pick this? Why couldn't you pick the Village People movie? You knew damn well would be back in a heartbeat.
I know why he didn't like the movie. Because the first third is a Burt Reynolds movie.
Yeah,
it's true.
There's an elongated barroom, country western barroom scene. There's a chase through mud and ramps and
with cops and I don't think there was banjo music, but there could have been.
You could easily slap a banjo track on him. Yeah.
There was a band from Deliverance in this film. So
yeah, that's right, Cowboy Bill McKinney.
That's right.
Yeah. But it's also it's based on a novel by Lauren Singer, but it's shot by Gordon Willis, who is a guy who loves to shoot in total darkness.
Yes.
This movie is no exception.
Yeah, I thought it was something wrong with a transfer on Amazon Prime or something. It was dark as hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very shadowy movie. Like, he also shot The Godfather, which is a very shadowy film.
Was he trying to use natural light excessively or something?
I don't think it was natural light. I think he's just a guy who likes to light. He likes to show you just a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Because shooting with natural light, like, you know, Barry Lyndon, is pretty difficult. Like, I looked at how they put together the cameras for that, and it seemed like it was way more work than just lighting the scene. You
know? I think it was just Kubrick being a dick.
Yeah, just being difficult, just being Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
Having to make the filmmaking process a process of suffering.
Kurosawa started that shit on Redbeard, and I think they all wanted to do it.
Oh, that's why Mifune wouldn't work with him anymore.
Yeah, he was absolutely pissed at him. So,
and Kurosawa's work really took a dive after that.
Did you ever hear the nickname that was given to Kubrick by one of the actors from years gone by?
No,
I will not say it. Because it'll get us thrown off of iTunes.
Okay.
And other
okay. Okay. John, what made, besides trying to lure Stu back, what was the reason you picked this movie?
It's a movie that everybody thinks they've seen and they haven't. It really is.
I've never heard of it. I had never, ever heard of it.
I've always heard of it, but I always thought it was Clute, the Sutherland and Jane Fonda movie with that was, I think, made by the same director. I, for whatever reason, thought it was something like that.
Okay.
And it was one of Beatty. You know, Beatty only made like a movie every 4 or 5 years by this point or something. I mean, he seemed to rarely make films, but was somehow had power and, you know, he had star power at the studios. He had a lot of pull, creative freedom, you know, freedom of budgets, yet actually didn't make very many movies. It's really weird. And it's a strange career. It's one of the most bizarre careers in Hollywood history. If you really look at it and go, well, gosh, it's not a lot of work for what he's done and to have the power he had.
And his directorial efforts are very eccentric pieces too, like Reds and Dick Tracy and Rules Don't Apply.
Yeah.
You know,
I really like Tracy. That was one of the ones that you guys, that I missed. I thought, shit, I wouldn't mind being on that one, but I do enjoy that one. And Bugsy as well. I enjoy
Bugsy,
a lot.
Written by James Toback.
Uh-oh.
He whips that IMDb page printed out when he sees a hot chick out in public.
So he wrote Bugsy.
He's like, hey, baby, you know I wrote Bugsy.
Oh, boy.
Hey, baby, you know I wrote this book about playing basketball with Jim Brown? Yeah.
pulls out the pages, they're all wrinkled from his pocket.
He's like, you see right here, I'm not lying. I directed Fingers. Have you heard of Fingers? No. You uncultured swine will come back to my apartment.
He'll boast that he went down on Tanya Roberts in the late 70s.
Yeah, you know who else did? Probably went down on Tanya Roberts in the late
70s. Yeah, I know. That's just she got roles, sadly.
James Toback's like, you know, I did a feature length documentary on Mike Tyson. You like Mike Tyson? All girls like Mike Tyson.
That's no game.
I will.
At all.
I will. I wrote Bugsy. Will you sleep with me?
Did he? He wrote The Pickup Artist, didn't he? Didn't he direct that?
I think he did. Is that one of the Pickup Artist things? IMDb page.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. Let's review that next week and piss Stu off even more.
Oh my God!
Let's do The Pickup Artist.
We should do the films of James Toback. You know,
yeah, God,
The Pickup Artist, written by a guy who has no game, is like me doing a screenplay adaptation of Roots. I have no knowledge of it whatsoever.
For a guy with no game, he got some nice pieces. Apparently, I have a Playboy magazine where he did a photo shoot with Nastassja Kinski, but it's the most unsexy thing you can possibly imagine. It's like with her and a dummy-sized version of Marlena Dietrich.
Nastassja Kinski is one. She's any director she worked with, she slept with. I promise.
Her father is Klaus.
Yes. Oh well. Yeah. When your dad is Klaus Kinski, you're going to be screwed up. But no. I know she was with Roman Polanski making tests, and she was underage. She had a pretty torrid affair with Paul Schrader on the set of Cat Boy. People.
She knows how to pick a man.
Oh, I know. And she said, this is according to John Milius. She said, you know, I always, Paul, F my directors, but with you, it's difficult.
No wonder he's so angry these days.
Yeah. Oh man, I love Paul Schrader's Facebook because he posts cringe all the time. It's so good, like weird stuff. Weird
I
stuff.
Like the 2016 election where the FBI had to show up at his front door.
The parallax view of its own.
This is one of those movies that when I think of 70s political thrillers, I think of this and I think of All the President's Men, which is by the same director. But what I thought was interesting about this movie, though, is I was kind of thinking it was going to be about, oh, you know, the government's corrupt and killing people. But in the film, the government is outsourcing all of their dirty work to corporations. And I was going, well, that's what they really do.
Yeah, like,
that's
not a conspiracy anymore.
I was also thinking too, this was the decade in which the media gave total blessing to conspiracy theory culture.
Yeah, they did.
Yep.
They totally did.
These days you wouldn't see a movie like this.
No.
Stuff occasionally slips through the cracks where you wonder, it's like, man, it had to go through the entire studio apparatus, even if it was like a boutique company like Blumhouse. But wasn't The Hunt where the liberal elite were hunting Trump supporters?
That was
I haven't seen it yet.
That was a Blumhouse. I haven't seen it. That was one of those movies that people got mad at, even though I think it was sympathetic to them.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like people were dismissing it without having seen a foot of film.
They got it canceled for a while. Like it got, I think they delayed the release or something.
Yeah,
the week it opened, the theater shut down because of COVID. It was less.
That's true. That's probably the real story.
Yeah.
Fucked.
But I just remember looking at the premise and going, wait, conservatives are mad because the movie's sympathetic? What? Like,
yeah, it has them as heroes being hunted by asshole rich neoliberals.
I was doesn't this fit your narrative? What? Yeah. Like, they own themselves so many times. It's ridiculous. Oh, yeah. It's so embarrassing.
It sounds like a story on Tucker Carlson tonight every day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it sounds like.
It seems like it's made for his audience, but everybody online was like, "Oh my gosh! So look at how they're fantasizing about killing us." Shut up.
Blumhouse has done it already twice. Wasn't Get Out kind of criticizing neolibs?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was. That was one that definitely was, but that audience ate it up.
Yeah.
So they own themselves in other ways. You know.
It led to conservatives kind of. I think they misunderstood that as well, or they. I don't know. They just look strange when they start attacking a film like Get Out or even The Hunt, even though I haven't seen it yet. But Get Out, they really didn't have any mind to attack it. There's nothing to attack that movie for. It just is what it is.
Right. It got it some press. You know,
well, the truth is, Get Out has a black point of view. Yeah. It's like that's what blacks know, that liberals are condescending to them.
Yeah,
they know it, and that movie exploits that a bit. And I thought it was funny in that aspect. I thought it was really funny.
Well, you know, John, they want the press, they want the publicity. Yes. I know because Jordan Peele called me. He said
called him.
He wanted
me. Call him at lunch with him.
I had lunch. He wanted me to put some ink in the column, get some press. He fed me the story.
Yeah, it's totally played up. But the Parallax View, I noticed in this movie, like the candidate killed in the beginning. By the way, we're going to have to be spoiler heavy here. The candidate killed in the beginning is an independent. He's not a Democrat or a Republican.
He's so centrist. They had to
get
rid of
him. Yeah, he's so centrist. And he's killed.
He even says, I'm so centrist, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets shot.
Yeah. And it's like, so they don't take a political side in this film.
Yeah.
It's not explicit about that. It kind of makes it where, I don't know if it's kind of, it's at a strange point because I don't know how people were feeling in 74 when this came out. I know they were pissed at Nixon, but.
It's a dog whistle, man. Me.
Yeah, I think it more captures a feeling in the culture than a political point of view. This feeling that there are forces in the government that are not only that are not only bad actors, but are like murderous and deranged, you know. And also, I think around this time you started to hear stuff about CIA, FBI, mind control stuff.
MK Ultra,
and all these experiments.
You hear
about all these experiments because this definitely goes into like weird brainwashing stuff. There's that sequence where he goes through, he sees that battery of tests. You see this in Clockwork Orange too.
Yeah.
So,
I figured that was the Dianetics test.
Yeah.
That's actually, that is very interesting you say that, because when I was watching that incredibly long sequence of the video that Brady was watching, I thought this is a lot like the crap that Scientology allegedly put you through when you first go in there for their course, where they just bombard you with images for 30 to 45 minutes, allegedly.
Don't they actually ask you to hold on to these rods? Because they ask him to put his palms on the armchair's seats.
The e-meter test, you hold on to these metal sticks, these metal rods that are attached to the machine.
Yeah, John Travolta's got his own specialized ones that are shaped like Arab cocks.
What are you talking about?
Oh, hey, I gotta go back for another reading.
It's like so long, he won't give it up.
That's why he's so high ranking.
Do you remember when Travolta
Eric? No, he's actually in really bad grounds with the high ups there. They do not like Travolta at all.
Oh, really? You're not joking? You're not making a joke?
No, I'm serious. I listened to the Leah Remedy podcast she does with Mike Rinder. This is 2 weeks in a row we're speaking about Mike Rinder.
Mike Rinder, who sounds like Stewart when he talks.
Well, sometimes. I found when he speaks about Australia, his Australian accent comes back.
Yeah.
But when he's speaking to Americans, it wavers like a pendulum. It swings like a pendulum. But yeah, apparently Travolta's in a lot of hot water with the people in Scientology, and it all happened from Battlefield Earth onwards. They said that film,
Tom Cruise. I was going to ask you, this is recent, but we're talking 20 something years already.
Yeah, Tom Cruise watched Battlefield Earth with that David Miscavige, the main guy. He goes, "You better not release this, it's going to kill us." They still put it out because they hemorrhaged money on the thing and it made nothing back.
So it's because they lost money and also it made them a laughing stock. Got it.
Well, also because it's pretty well known about Travolta's preferences.
Yeah, and the Church of Scientology is not friendly to gays.
No,
I remember Paul Haggis, that's why he left. He was like, "Oh, I didn't know that they weren't friendly." I was like, "How long have you been in this organization and you have to read all these books and do all this stuff and you didn't know that? Are you kidding me?"
I don't believe that for a second. The church is actually like super neocon. They don't like taxes. They don't, apparently they were the only bloc that voted for Trump in LA in 2016. Majority of the group. I didn't know that about Travolta. I mean, I don't really follow any of the Scientology stuff. I know he's living in a neighborhood outside of Clearwater, which is Scientology Central in Florida. Yeah,
that's their Salt Lake City, basically.
That's Mecca for Scientologists, pretty much. But even that, when I watch another channel, it's called Growing Up in Scientology, it's called, by a guy who is now an ex-Scientologist, says that Clearwater is not overrun with Scientologists. It is just about two or three blocks. All the rest is people who are not.
I'm sure it's like Salt Lake or anywhere else where it's there, but if you're not involved in it, you could probably it probably wouldn't affect your life very much.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could picture that easily.
Yeah.
San Francisco's got Castro Street. It's just one street. That sort of,
Yeah, the rest is just big tech.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuart,
you've
been very angry that we watched.
I've been angry today. I'm tired.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you're angry anyway. So yeah.
No, I'm not.
Did you watch it tired?
Well, I didn't sleep very well. That usually constitutes me being tired.
Even as exciting as the first third of the movie is, which you may disagree with that, I don't think this is a movie you should watch sleepy by any means.
Yeah. Well, they put me to sleep.
Yeah.
Mm.
I wasn't sleep. Well, I was okay, but then I put it on and it was okay. I'll disagree about that first third. I thought that was boring as hell.
Really? Okay.
So are you a Warren Beatty fan, Stu? Do you watch like Shampoo and
I've never seen that one, actually. I have seen, like I mentioned, I do like Dick Tracy. I do like Bugsy quite a bit.
Boy, Reds. Do you like Reds?
Boy, do we have a movie for you. It's called McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I like movie.
I know. Yeah, that's the one where he's got the beard, isn't it?
Yeah.
That movie. I like that movie, too, but I know that was a joke because I know you don't like you don't like Westerns, and it's slow as shit.
It's one of those Westerns that's for people who don't like Westerns, kind of, but it still works.
But it works for – yeah, it works for me, too. But also, in the way that – even though you disagree – and the way that Parallax View the first third is super exciting with all these action set pieces that you didn't expect were going to be there. The first third of McCabe and Mrs. Miller, you're not going to understand a word anybody says.
It's one of those Westerns that's like kind of like Heaven's Gate that's super realistic, too. Or at least it's projecting realism, I guess.
For all we know, it didn't look anything like that. But, you know, it's...
Reel off some other Warren Beatty titles for me, please. I'll see if I've seen them. I don't remember.
Bonnie and Clyde,
yeah.
I've got that one, but I've not seen it yet.
It's worth watching. It's overrated. Bullworth? Have you seen Bullworth?
Hang on. Oh, where he's the politician? No, yeah. I haven't. Because that stupid song from the film put me off watching it.
What about Ishtar? You like Ishtar?
Ishtar. Yeah, I love that one, man. The best.
I like Ishtar too, Stu. Heaven Can Wait? I think it's a remake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that one.
What about Town and Country?
No. With Bonnie and Clyde, the only reason why I haven't watched it is because there's the film and the special features is a full length or a medium length documentary at Bonnie and Clyde. I don't know if I should watch the documentary first, then the film, or the other way around. That's the only reason why I've been put off watching it.
Stu, I want you to ask what John thinks of Bonnie and Clyde.
John, what do you think of Bonnie and Clyde?
A celebration of two really trashy people who deserve to die.
Yeah, it really is. I say it's worth watching because it is a movie that's important in the story of film, but I remember my grandfather was disgusted by that movie.
My grandfather despised it.
Yeah.
When you say it celebrates two trashy people that deserve to die, are you talking about Bonnie and Clyde or are you talking about Warren Beatty and Oh, What's Her Face?
In this case, it would be Bonnie and Clyde. I've heard not so nice things about Faye.
Well, hang on a second. Wait. So is the Rob Zombie trilogy of films actually just the modern day Bonnie and Clyde in his vision?
Yeah, it's an influence.
Yeah, well, very much. That kind of big, you know, the kind of going out with a bang at the end of Devil's Rejects. He does it in a way that's very different, but it's the same kind of thing.
Okay, so you just ruined the ending of the film for me. Thanks.
You got another story.
That's like saying, oh, JFK gets shot. You know.
Before I watch Ned Kelly, don't tell me what happened. All right.
I don't know what happened to Ned Kelly. Don't really care either. No.
We all know what happened to Bonnie and Clyde.
You don't know what happened to every single Bush Ranger.
No, don't care. Okay.
But there's actually
they don't teach that shit in your schools.
No, we don't celebrate crime. People seem to think.
Mad Dog Morgan.
No, they still teach that stuff.
I would imagine the outside of that, I would imagine the real victims are the Australians themselves. It's a freaking penal colony, right? I mean, you guys get sent to this giant island.
Yeah, don't bring this guy back ever again.
I was going to
say.
No. I'm siding with you. What are you talking about?
I'm not siding with that. What makes
No. Never mind.
Right. Just give you a piece of advice. Shut up for the rest of the day.
Hey, but actually, little known fact.
See, Eric, I apologize. I blame my Scorpio.
No.
Man, Scorpios, they're nuts.
Oh, that's you ain't kidding. I actually have heard that. I said, Scorpios, you're all insane. I said, shut up or I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah.
It's Jekyll and Hyde with these guys.
Woo.
Stu, what do you like better, Dick Tracy or the Dick Tracy special in 2010?
I didn't know there was a Dick Tracy special. I'll tell you what I like better. I like the Dick Tracy films from the 30s.
Mm.
You like better than the movie? Than the feature from 1991 or whatever, 1990s?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I like the Dick Tracy film from 1990. I really enjoy it, except for Madonna.
Yeah, she's a weak link there.
General consensus, pretty much, I think, on that movie.
I disagreed on that one. But
oh, yeah, that's right.
You never minded that at any point.
Stu, there's a special on that, like they did on TCM where Leonard Maltin interviewed Beatty in character as Dick Tracy and was interviewing him as though he was Dick Tracy.
Much like, what's her name? Christopher Guest gets interviewed
as Nigel Tufnel. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like
Michael Davidson Hubbins.
Eric, like you said in the episode, they ask Leonard's like, which actor do you like best? And Beatty's going, well, you know, I like so and so. I thought this guy was pretty good. He goes, the only one I don't like is Beatty. He's kind of a liberal, you know.
Yeah, it's the most fascinating thing I've seen in a while.
Yeah,
it's really weird.
Truly a bizarre piece of pop culture that was made
to be a placeholder for the rights to Dick Tracy, because Beatty has still got the movie rights and has not handed them over.
And that's why Guest, McKean, and Shearer do the appearance so they can keep the rights to the Spinal Tap, otherwise they'll lose it. That's why these Return of Spinal Tap film and the new album, just to keep the rights.
And the albums suck. They're so not funny and low effort, but I guess it does something for them.
Same reason Fox makes shitty X-Men movies until Disney had to buy them to get the fucking X-Men.
I did like The Majesty of Rock, that song from Break Like the Wind. Mm. That was decent. It was fine.
But yeah, they recycle a lot of humor, like the a cappella Elvis's Grave joke. They'll do other things where they're trying to do something different and they can't seem to agree on the right note or the right pitch or something.
Like Ethan Hawke on Born Again.
Yeah, right. So, Stu,
I wonder how people found that bonus episode we did.
What did people find on it? Born Again. I haven't gotten any feedback about it.
No, my brother found it, but yeah. I wonder how many people actually found the bonus episode that was after the horror one that Hunter and I did.
Yeah, if you're listening, go on the Facebook or go on Twitter and let us know if you heard it.
Because we only did that just to see how many people actually listen after the credits.
Yeah,
that's why we put the credits in about 15 seconds of space in the bonus episode. But yeah.
Stu, you said you didn't like this movie. What is it? Was it just boring? What was it? Is it Warren Beatty? Is it that you've got a problem with him?
No, he was okay. I didn't mind him. His hairdo was a bit, you know.
His hair is the only, I wrote in my review, his hair is the only thing that has aged very poorly.
It's like helmet hair or something.
It was really like, a tin of shoe polish away from being a Harlem Globetrotter in this film. His hair was that bad, but I mean, he himself was fine. He was outclassed on the screen by one guy, and this is the only shining light of this film for me. And I don't know how many of you guys picked it up here. It was the professor playing the game of, what was it? Pong.
Oh yeah.
The gym. Yeah.
And the guy who played that professor was who?
Anthony Zerbe.
Yep.
Abner fucking Devereaux. I picked it straight away.
You know I've met him, right?
No, I think you told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he came and talked to my acting class in college.
That's right, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember you saying.
Yeah.
Because I told you once to ask him about Phantom of the Park, but you didn't do it.
That's right. And he... he did a show. He did like a play with it's the guy who narrated Babe. I can't remember his name, but it was a show with just him and that actor. His name's Roscoe something. He's passed away. Zerbe's still alive, right? Yeah, he's still alive.
Wow, is he at 80s? I'd imagine.
Yeah, he's in his 80s. Who was the guy? Roscoe Lee Brown. He did a show with Roscoe Lee Brown. He narrated.
Is that Boss?
Hmm?
Is that Boss Hogg?
No. Black actor.
Yeah. He was in Jumpin' Jack Flash, Moon 44, Logan's Run.
Wait, Stu, do you know your Sanford and Son episodes?
Never seen it.
Oh, you never seen Sanford and Son? If you, he's in a really great episode of that. But he's in a lot of movies. You know him if you saw him. You'd be like, oh, that guy.
Yeah. He's in a lot of stuff. Let me see. He was the voice of Kingpin in the Spider-Man cartoon from the 90s.
Is he like another black actor from the 70s, Alan Weeks, who seemed to be in everything? All those blaxploitation films.
Yeah, he's more of an elegant black actor. Yeah, he did Shakespeare.
Yeah, he's very erudite. He's very
He's not Fred Williamson or you know.
Oh, he was on Mannix.
Everybody was on Mannix. Yeah.
Was he on Good Times?
He might. Yes, he was. He was Reverend Sam on Good Times.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and let's see. He was on The Cosby Show as Dr. Barnabas Foster. So it says 80. It looks like he was on a few episodes of that.
Yeah, he played like a professor or something. A doctor that was trying to. He was going to play a card game with Dr. Huxtable. It was a weird thing.
See, when Bill Cosby got released from prison, he actually did a Fat Albert impression. He went, hey, hey, hey.
He's a master troll now.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I fucking laughed my ass off when I saw it. Here's all these people up in arms. Bill Cosby's getting released from prison. He impersonates a Fat Albert moment. Oh, that's a classic.
He was on Real Ghostbusters as Big Ed. Yeah.
Everybody did voices on Real Ghostbusters.
And Bill and Ted, he was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, the TV show. That was great.
Which of the Ghostbusters animated series was the one that was the inferior to the other one? There was the Ghostbusters and the Real Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. Real Ghostbusters was the good one. Because then they did another one. It was Slimer. Is it Slime? Yeah, Extreme Ghostbusters. Yeah.
Yeah. That was garbage. Yeah. Never watched it, so I don't know.
You just had to look at it, though.
Oh, I knew. I mean, it was 10 years after, you know, anybody cared, and I cared as a kid, so I was just like, why am I going to watch this? I'm 12, you know.
They didn't do the one for the one with the fat broads?
No. Everyone wants to forget that it happened.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, okay, Stu, I found something you'll know. He was in Phantom 2040.
Oh, okay, I still haven't seen it either. Yeah.
All right. Well, they did a show at school, and then Anthony Zerbe came and talked to my acting class. So, yeah. So he was in this movie. So Stu likes this movie because Anthony Zerbe was in it.
I do like that moment of seeing him. That was a real, you know, eyes lit up.
That was kind of cutting edge at the time to have like a video game in there, you know.
Pong.
Yeah.
Also, like observe this brilliance. Also, like
cutting edge to have a monkey. I guess Clint Eastwood was watching this film, wasn't he?
He's gonna have a monkey. I better have a monkey.
Clint has a connection to this
around this time as well.
Stu Bear. Said something. What?
I said, wasn't BJ and the Bear around this time as well?
That was 5 years later.
Oh, okay. Mm. 5 years.
And Eric, you said Clint has a connection to this movie?
Yeah. Anybody know what it is?
I'm going to guess. He and Buddy Van Horn choreographed the car chase.
No. And
that's really Clint driving the car.
That's a good guess. But no.
William McKinney. Yeah.
Well, you're not wrong, if you recall in the scene where Beatty, this is early on in the movie, Beatty gets visited by the reporter lady, you get the sense they were lovers at one point, and she says, someone's trying to kill me. He has to dismiss a girl that he had there before, and that girl is Joanne Harris, who Clint went out with because they met on the set of The Beguiled.
Really?
Yeah.
So was Beatty flexing on Clint?
Maybe.
yeah, very likely.
Yeah. Maybe. This is 3 years later. Clint might have dumped her already at that point.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, Clint was moving on to other waify blondes.
Clint pumped them and dumped a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah.
What should I say? I'm a Chad.
Stu, why didn't you like the car chase, and why didn't you like the barroom brawl?
Because the barroom brawl added nothing.
I thought it was great. It was awesome.
It was fun, but I'll agree with that. It just elongates things, you know?
I think Beatty wanted to look tough on film.
Yeah.
I'm tough.
I think he wanted to look like a tough guy, and so he did a big barroom brawl.
What was the point of that sheriff coming, or that deputy, coming up to him at the bar saying, "Oh, you're a girl." What was the point of that?
So it's so that Beatty can show those hayseeds who's boss, you know?
Yeah.
He's gotta go. Oh, you like Smokey and the Beauty? Well, that wasn't a thing yet. Trying to think of some other redneck movie.
White Lightning.
What, you like White Lightning? Well, screw you, pal. you look like a guy who watches Burt Reynolds movies.
You look like a hairdresser.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, well, you know, he played one in Shampoo. He played Jay Sebring. That's what I said.
Yeah.
What about the car chase, though? You didn't like the car chase.
What's wrong with the car chase? Yeah.
No, I don't care much for car chases, unless they're really well done, like To Live and Die in L.A., then yeah.
I'm a fan of movies that surprise me, and the first third, I was just not expecting to be seeing what I was seeing. The last half of the movie is what I expected. Okay, this is a paranoid, slow-moving 70s thriller.
Actually, speaking of car chases, John, I'll ask you, because I know you will know this. What is the best car chase of the 70s on film?
The 70s. I like the 7-Ups. That's my favorite.
There you go. Exactly, yeah. What I was going to say. The 7-Ups is the best one.
It's a great movie.
That's a badass car chase. Fucking outstanding.
I wonder if we have such a preference for that because it ends really well.
It's a really good chase, and I've been on those highways to see something on those roads is pretty neat because they're never used in films.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. There was one line in this film I thought was really good. It was spoken by the boss that Warren Beatty has at the newspaper. And he says, "We're in the business of reporting the news, not creating it." Mm-hmm. I thought, well, how times have changed now.
Yeah, it's almost laughable how nice this film is to the media compared to nowadays.
Yeah.
They still had ethics.
That might have been the case back then, too, just at a very smaller degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that there's a scene where someone has a Time magazine on the table, and it's a Time, and it's got the Jesuits on the cover. And the Jesuits are subject of many conspiracy theories. Especially around this time, but you know, I think the media has always, I think they've always been in the business of pushing narratives. You know, I don't think that's new.
Oh yeah.
I think it's just more obvious now.
Well, back to Walter Duranty in the Soviet Union.
Yeah. I was going to bring up that example, but so, you know, I don't think this is anything new.
Probably not. It's just more prominent these days and more shameful.
Yeah, we have so much media and it's varied in different sources and viewpoints, and now we get more of it. But yeah, I think it was around back then. But nowadays, it's just crazy.
The media could be as honest as the Young Turks. I mean, then we'd be all better off.
I think the mainstream media is very, it's just so nakedly partisan now that it's just so obvious.
That got exposed when Trump got elected. The doors got blown wide open.
Well, yeah, because they told everybody it wasn't going to happen, and then it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
colors got shown.
Well, they expect that they can mold reality. You know, that's what they feel they're in the business of, is defining what reality is for everybody. And when Trump got elected, it showed that they didn't have that power anymore. And so that's where that freak out came from. Because, you know, they had a meltdown during his entire term. I mean, it was
nonstop.
They said they would blame it on him, but it was all them, you know.
Yeah. Well, also the 2016 election was the first time ever that the millennials were told no in mass. And that's why they just had the meltdown that they did for forever. Still going on.
Yeah.
I think the funniest thing I ever read that Trump, I'm half asleep. Trump put out, I meant to say tweet, Trump tweet. The funniest thing that Trump ever put out on Twitter was, it's not the context of what he said, but it's how he finished it. He said something about, from now on, no more transgender in the military. But at the end of it, he put, thank you.
Thank you.
He put, thank you. Just with a pleasantry on the end so he didn't look rude and authoritarian. I said someone needs to put a book out of all these tweets throughout that four-year period. It would be...
Yeah, I miss that wit since Silicon Valley has denied it. You know.
Are those archived somewhere?
I'm sure somebody on a website somewhere has it. 2 years ago in L.A. in West Hollywood... they put up a sort of pop-up. They called it a museum. You might still be able to look up online. It was a very brief moment in time. They did this pop-up museum of Trump tweets where you walked around and they had all these monitors. And they had all the tweets there, every single one apparently. And everybody went there as a goof, to goof on him. But I was thinking of going there. So I was like, hell yeah, I want to laugh. This is great.
One thing I wanted to mention was the funniest thing about that car chase, before we get totally away from that first third of the film, is when Beatty steals the squad car, he puts on the sheriff's hat.
He does.
Yeah, he does. Yes. Love, that was such a great touch.
But with his thick old helmet hair that he's got. Yeah. And that hat on it just looks crazy. I don't know.
It's so goofy, like the mud sprays on his face and everything. It gets goofier than you expect. Yeah,
it's really strange. And he apparently directed part of the film without credit. It makes you wonder how much of that was him.
Well, Anthony Zerbe didn't get a credit on it at the end at all. He got nothing.
Yeah, he was uncredited completely.
That's bullshit.
He may have wanted it as a surprise or something.
You know who he was back then.
We saw him in the Omega Man, right?
Mm-hmm. The Omega Man is not Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. I'm sorry. So
that's right. Yeah. Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park is 100% Kino.
Kino, yeah.
You better believe it. I know you're saying that to keep me happy. And you're doing a good job of it. So,
supposedly, the scene with Anthony Zerbe and the chimp inspired a SNL sketch that Al Franken did on Saturday Night Live.
So, what you're saying is it's not funny.
No, it's not.
Sorry, Al Franken is not funny.
There's a good chance of somebody getting molested.
Yeah, that's true. Did Al Franken molest the chimp?
I think he did. I think the chimp was one of the complainers in that list of women that complained about Al Franken. That was acting like it was one person that was that one Playboy model. No, it was actually something like six or seven women.
They doth protest too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Franken, there's one guy who got everything he deserved.
He's trying to come back. he's really trying to come back.
Hire Zolli to be his media guy.
Yeah.
He's in Minnesota. He can help. So he'll get the Star Trek Shariah going.
So the movie takes a turn. It starts out, it seems like an action movie, but then it becomes once the Parallax Corporation kind of takes center stage, it seems to go more in the
crazy. It's like Kolchak the Night Stalker or something.
Yeah.
He's a reporter that won't give up, and he basically gets involved with this corporation. And they know I think they know he's faking it. They kind of keep he's in the gray area.
He gets involved with what? He gets involved with what?
The corporation.
The what?
The Parallax Corporation.
Oh, you're miles behind me. The corporation.
Brian Smart, Jello Biafra. The corporation.
Is it possible that the corporation is... They seem to have no problem having their own killers that are actually efficient. Is it possible that they're just recruiting patsies?
That was the twist. I think
that was the whole thing.
They're recruiting like decoy patsies.
They're recruiting Sirhan and Lee Harvey Oswald.
Not the real killers.
Yeah, because like the letter that they'd send to people was patronizing. Like it's clearly sent to somebody who's at the bottom of the food chain or something, and they want to make them feel important.
Yeah, you're actually a smart guy, and because at the very beginning of the movie. You see that there's two gunmen. You see the one guy who gets chased off the Space Needle, but then there's that dude who's a bartender. You see him like tuck a gun away and just walk off.
Yeah, that is
a real shoot. Yeah,
that is Fred Grandy from the Monster Squad television show. Another guy who didn't get credited.
Speaking of monsters, I want to know everybody's opinion on Mrs. Rob Zombie being Lily Munster.
So I know Stu is very excited.
That's confirmed, right? That's confirmed.
Yes.
Okay. It's confirmed?
Yes.
Stu, what do you think? Are you excited?
I've got a boner. What do you reckon?
Typical Scorpio reaction.
It's because you're a Scorpio.
That's right. No, I am not happy about... Stick Insect, Sherry Moon, but it was always going to be inevitable, so I'm not shocked by it.
You would think that he would get her to be somebody else, and I don't not the Pat Priest role. I don't know, like a neighbor or something.
Spot the dragon. Look, you know damn well she is finessing him into that. You know, I'm going to be Lily Munster or that divorce lawyer.
I don't know if that's the dynamic they have. I wonder. I think he just shoves her in his movies.
Yeah. She doesn't. It doesn't seem like. Does she show up in other movies? I've never seen her in anything.
Yeah,
else.
If she was adamant about being an actress, she would be in somebody else's films.
She's done one only, which was the Toolbox Murders remake with Tobe Hooper. That is it.
Oh, and it's because it's Tobe Hooper. Yeah. But I'll bet. She gets calls all the time to do cheap POS horror movies.
She must turn them down. There's a silver lining for you. Sherry, this is Dread Central, so super reliable. Mm-hmm. Sherry Moon Zombie has reportedly been cast as Lily Munster, so that's not definitive at all.
It'll happen.
It
seems like it would.
I don't. I think that that's a pretty safe bet.
It's the rest of the cast I'm curious about, because really there's nobody else in his troupe that fits the other members. I mean, as much as I don't want to see Sherry Moon Zombie as Lily Munster, you can work around it and make it somewhat plausible is what I'm trying to say.
Well, it's been confirmed that Butch Patrick is reprising his role as Eddie Munster. It's been confirmed.
What? Nah, you're taking the piss.
Friggin'
why that could happen.
So I'm just glad Sid Haig is not around to play Grandpa Munster.
Grandpa, oh, God. Yeah.
Do you think Bill Moseley is going to be in there?
It's Herman. Yeah, most likely. They'll stick a bunch of elevated boots on him.
You don't think he's going to get like a name for anybody, like at least Herman? Like, there's not going to be actually. I guess he doesn't. I guess he doesn't actually do that, does he?
No.
He never gets names for his movies.
He gets horror nerd stuff. Like, he'll get Michael Berryman or Ken Foree. You know, he does a lot of horror nerd casting.
Brian Posehn
will show up.
I'm predicting it right now. It'll probably happen.
Diamond Dallas Page might show up.
Grandpa. All right. He'll be doing yoga.
Yeah, he was in Devil's Rejects.
Hulk it up, brother.
Or you might get Kane Hodder, you know?
Kane Hodder or Tyler Mayne as Herman Munster.
Tyler Mayne, that's he's looking skinny lately. He might need to hit the gym again.
Well, Fred Gwynn wasn't like Mr. Universe.
Oh, dude, you know who he needs to cast? He needs Clint Howard in there. He's used Clint Howard before. We need Clint Howard.
Eddie Munster.
Clint Howard as Eddie Munster.
Yeah.
At that point, you might as well get Butch Patrick back.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or I'll bet Brad Dourif will show up. You know, he puts Brad Dourif in a lot of stuff.
Who's still alive? Pat Priest is going to show up in a cameo. Butch Patrick's going to have a cameo.
The rest are gone. Yeah.
The rest are gone, really? Wow.
They're all gone, yeah.
What about Daniel Roebuck? Is he going to show up? Or I'm trying to think of other people who've been in. Danielle Harris. What about her?
Yeah, she'll be in there.
Yeah, she's gonna play Marilyn. Yeah, I think you said that. I can't hear anything.
Sorry.
I'm having a lot of audio issues over here.
Yeah.
All right.
I said Grandpa should be played by radio host Michael Savage. he should bitch about immigrants and stuff.
Forget. Great. Do you think go ahead, Stu.
I'll tell you what is really bugging me. It is, honestly, it's not so much the cast, it's the soundtrack, the potential soundtrack.
Oh, no.
Well, dude, yeah. John 5 is ready. He's ready to go. They need to get John 5 and David Lee Roth to do the soundtrack. Then it'll be good.
And if we get a collaboration between Rob Zombie and Marilyn Manson for the Munsters theme somehow.
Marilyn Manson is radioactive right now. He's not doing
anything.
He's
in prison.
Oh, you're right.
Surrendered himself to the authorities.
Yeah, he spit on somebody. Yeah.
Oh, boy. You would think that Rob would have so much reverence for the show that he wouldn't mess with it. He wouldn't, like, put his sheen on it.
Oh, I don't know, man.
We're hoping for that.
I really hope if he shows some restraint and does it justice, I will be big proud of Rob Zombie. I'll be like our boy's grown up, you know.
You can still somehow have the Rob Zombie nonsense, but leave the family out of it. Have the family react to that stuff.
Yeah.
Like have the characters be the characters go ahead.
Sorry. This has been 3 weeks in a row now we've spoken about the
we're obsessed with this movie. Okay.
We'll now put a moratorium on it, and what we'll do is we'll do one 8-hour call-in show just about Rob Zombie's The Monster.
I just wanted to get your perspective on the monster casting.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Have Garrow on the line for the whole time. And it'll be the most downloaded show in history. So, yeah. 3 weeks in a row.
Yes.
I think we've spoken about more than what Rob Zombie has.
Yeah. Well, he's too busy writing the script in his Dracula, you know. He's writing it, riding around.
He's in the Dracula for inspiration, playing some Skinner.
Yeah, playing some Skinner.
He can go. Oh, yeah. I want to see if he can go curse-free for the Munsters.
That's what that's what I want. I want a Munsters movie with no F-bombs from him.
If he did one, like, G-rated level, I would have, like, the greatest respect for him.
Oh, I know. Our boy's grown up if he does that.
I think you're probably going to get a PG-13.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. That I could live with, but... Yeah, as we've said, if he R-rates this thing and puts that cross on Herman Munster's head... Oh, man.
One thing
it's coming for him.
One thing we're not even thinking about is like the handlers, the rights handlers, like they're not going to want to mess around with it too much. At least that would be my guess.
Depends on who's got it, honestly. If they,
yeah.
And coming up after this, it'll be Rob Zombie's Lidsville. You watch.
Starring Marilyn Manson.
Oh, yeah, he'd like that.
Hell yeah, have a giant hat.
Shoehorn that, what's that song he did? Not Get Your Gun, this other one. Oh, off that album. I forgot what it was called. Dope Hat, that was it.
Yeah.
You'll shoehorn that into the soundtrack for sure.
I thought his filmmaking career was done. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, we all did.
Yeah,
we thought it was done after Lords of Salem. He came back. 31, he came back.
Well, there was a slow descent into nothing. Like Lords of Salem, probably like $4 or $5 million. Then 31 was, I believe it was an Indiegogo GoFundMe thing.
Yeah, it was.
And then finally, the third Devil's
Rejects. Three from Hell was, hey, Dad, can you lend me some money?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the budget was reported at something like 1.5. That's not a lot of money.
It says three on Wikipedia.
$3 million. Okay, maybe I'm wrong on that. But like, it just got smaller and smaller and smaller. And I was just like, man, this guy's not working with the studios anymore. He's begging for money online.
Well, didn't he kind of crap the bed with the studios when he made House of a Thousand Corpses? Wasn't there a big scandal with that?
He badmouthed Universal.
Yeah, on camera, he said, he said something about them and they shut it down or something. And he had to go release it somewhere else.
Considering the Monsters is owned by Universal.
Yeah. No,
yeah. Something's going on. New executive.
Yeah.
Board.
The people who were pissed at him are gone. Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
So, I mean, it was like a one way road to just Nothingsville. And then obviously he pulled this out of his ass. I remember he talked about the Groucho Marx movie and that hockey movie, and as soon as he announced that, I was like, neither are happening, ever. They're not going to allow him to make anything other than, you know, a Rob Zombie movie.
There is no way the Groucho Marx film was getting made, not with the Marx estate, the Groucho Marx estate. That would be like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope, not you. Someone with some clout, yeah, but not you. It's just, no.
Well, he wanted to get away from the horror stuff. Like, I think that was his ticket. That's what he thought he was going to use that to platform off of horror stuff.
Isn't it funny how the horror genre is like a tar pit? You know, once you do it, you can't get out.
Yeah. Yeah, and even a guy like Rob Zombie, who lives and breathes that stuff, he didn't even want to be in it anymore, at least not filmmaking-wise.
Well, he claimed his favorite movies were not horror films. They were like Frank Capra and John Ford movies. Billy Wilder.
He would play up his love of stuff like Omega Man in interviews, but I think that was just doing the bit.
Yeah.
And of course, Clockwork Orange, because he did the music video like that.
If he likes his old Hollywood stuff, why the hell doesn't he bring that any into his movies?
Yeah, his movies all have the sort of hyper stylized 70s grindhouse quote unquote thing going on.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lack of confidence.
It is. I agree.
I liked House of a Thousand Corpses just because it was the first time that I saw that level of energy on the screen. It was just like a 12-year-old edgelord kid screaming in your face.
It was like a fight at a Hot Topic or something.
Yeah.
I actually saw that at the theaters when it came out. The wife and I went and watched it, and we had a blast watching. We thought it was funny as hell.
I've only seen it once. I haven't seen it since I watched it on DVD in college.
I was floored by how much screaming and just all the imagery is just like pounding you in the head.
Well, I just remember it was a lot. Like it was,
yeah,
you know, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And that's when Sherry Moon actually looked half decent. She had some meat on her body, but now,
yeah,
a skeleton.
Father Time's caught up. Yeah.
And then Rejects, I didn't like at all. I thought that was terrible.
What I don't like about that movie is how freaking nihilistic it is. Every other word in the first scene is the F word, you know?
Do you know cinematically what the film Devil's Rejects reminds me of the most?
What's that?
Is The Hills Have Eyes, the Wes Craven one. For some reason, just the look of it reminds me a lot of The Hills Have Eyes.
There is a Trailer Massacre, isn't there?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think there is, yeah. But it's just being open desert and all sort of stuff reminds me of...
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It does have that aesthetic.
Hang on, I just got to make a note here. Parallax View, 10 minutes. Talk. Zombie, 5 minutes.
And John is suspiciously quiet during the Rob Zombie.
Because I've never seen Devil's Rejects. And I fucking hated House of a Thousand Corpses.
Oh, don't ever watch Devil's Rejects. At the end, it asks you to sympathize with these people that you have no...
And you watch them do unspeakable things to people throughout the movie. Yeah. Like torture and murder and like just all this stuff. And then at the end, we're supposed to go like, oh, they're getting shot. Isn't it sad?
Yeah. It's kind of like the Wild Bunch thing. Like some people make that criticism against that movie, but it's just like, no, there's moments of honorability there that, you know, make it worthwhile. And also the people that they're getting killed by are pretty despicable themselves. So,
Right.
And, whereas in Devil's Rejects, the people they're killing are just innocent people.
Yeah.
Like
just cops. Cause they had to stop them cause they're fucking, you know, on a rampage.
Mm-hmm. But Devil's Rejects as well also has that long shootout scene dragged out in slow motion. We can shoehorn Skinner's free bird in there, man.
Yeah, that's so shopping mall edge. You know, it's just like predictable.
Yeah, free bird is bad. I think now that I think about it, the deranged law officers after the deranged family, I think everyone says that he's just remaking Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Over and over, he's probably remaking Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 over and over.
Yeah, he is. That's what he's really doing.
Mm-hmm.
This in-your-face, over-the-top, gross-out crap.
Yeah,
so
it's just obnoxious. It's obnoxious cinema.
And it's even got Bill Moseley, Texas Chainsaw.
That's
Massacre.
True.
Yeah, exactly.
It does. And Dennis Hopper, but not that he remembers it.
No, Dad. Dennis Hopper says he has no memory of doing Texas Chainsaw 2. He's so out of his mind on coke.
He was still partying with Shintaro Katsu in his head.
Oh, gosh.
Could you imagine him and Toby Hooper in that set? It would just be like a mountain of snow.
Competing for blowing lines.
Yeah.
Coke.
Yeah. Oh, Canon Films.
Is he dead? Toby Hooper? Or is he still alive?
He's dead.
No, he died.
He's dead. We can talk about his cocaine problem. So
He died 2 weeks before he got beat up by his girlfriend. Oh no! Excuse me. 2 2 weeks after. Excuse me.
Wait, what?
Probably slapped a corpse at the funeral too. Who knows? But she didn't know about this. Like a few weeks. It was maybe months for all I know. It all seemed to happen at once. He died, but before that, he was in the news fairly recently for getting beat up by his girlfriend.
How old was his girlfriend?
That's a good question. Let's find out.
68?
No, I think she was younger than that.
Is Toby Hooper a Scorpio?
Let's see. In legal documents obtained by TMZ.
Oh, yeah!
Now we're all... Yeah, you know it's the truth. 74-year-old Toby Hooper shared pictures of his of his battered face. He said his injuries were the result of a beating 2 weeks ago from his 36-year-old girlfriend, Rebecca Hodges.
He also claims that Hodges
punched him in the face in separate incidences in April.
36-year-old girlfriend, so he was on the corner with his IMDb printed out as well.
No, he was going to horror conventions and picking up chicks, I'll bet.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Toby Hooper. I made Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Will you sleep with me? And they say no, and he says, "Well, I got a pile of blow in my car." Yeah. And they say yes.
What about Funhouse? That was a good one. Yeah.
No, he picks up girls with Life Force. That's how he picks up girls.
Life Force. Yeah. Yeah. Funhouse. I like the first 40 minutes. It's a Miami movie. They shot in Miami.
Oh yeah. That represent. Anytime something's Miami, I'm like, you should talk to Eric. And Eric's like,
Except
Eric's when it's
like, I'm too young to have seen it.
Yeah, Eric's anytime he's always like, oh, I've never seen that.
No, I like the first 40 minutes of that. I think they actually capture what it's like at those seedy carnivals. And then it just becomes a running around the dark house movie and running from a monster. So, you know, and not particularly well done either.
It was a very cool poster, Funhouse. That was
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
The film itself was, you know. He probably gets the cheeks by saying, no, I actually really need direct Poltergeist. That was me. It was the other guy. I directed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even that little girl. Yeah.
Who knows what the truth is there? There's been so much, you know, like even Spielberg has been like, no, Toby did it.
Yeah, but Spielberg won't take credit for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You just don't know.
He's not allowed to do two films at once, which he was doing E.T., so yeah. He's not legally allowed to do two films. So that's why he said, yeah, that was Toby.
It was Toby.
What's weird is that, like, the two – I don't want to – well, Toby didn't necessarily have an actual, like, style. But like, you can tell if it's true that they co-directed it. You could tell when Spielberg was behind the lens, and you can tell when Toby was behind the lens. And then
co-directed like Clint Eastwood and Buddy Van Horn, right?
Exactly. Yeah. In which case, Clint was always behind the lens.
Pretty much. Yeah. And when it's directed like George P. Cosmatos and Sylvester Stallone.
Right? Yeah.
Clint, all right, Clint, take three. Now we got enough. Moving on.
Yeah, you give him too much credit there. Take one.
That's good. We'll fix it in post.
You never heard of a cutaway.
Clint, the editing bay is on fire.
No, we're going to keep working.
That happened during post on Richard Jewell. Like the building was on fire and he was like, nah, we're going to work through it.
God.
So anyway, Parallax View. So,
I tried my best to steer away from the film, but yeah. Oh, well, I think I'll come back to it.
Eric, what are some thoughts you had on this movie? You haven't said much about it.
Well, I pointed out the hayseed stuff, which was very strange mm-hmm. at the beginning, and then it becomes something that you expect it to be more of. I mean, that's really all my thoughts on it. I enjoyed it. It's a good movie.
It goes from a Burt Reynolds film to The Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to put it.
I mean, it's not as good as The Manchurian Candidate.
No, it's not.
No, not at all.
Bert meets Manchurian Candidate. Yeah, yeah. That there's what the movie is, for sure.
This is an MK Ultra project.
Yeah.
I've been brainwashed. I'm Thor.
You know, it's a 70s.
Assassin. It should be called Smoking the Assassin.
Oh, that would work.
That is a great
I'm surprised they didn't re-release it. Try to make a little more money off of it.
Smoking the Assassin, yeah. Pretty good.
Warren Beatty's running from the law. Could see the trailer.
So nobody bought Warren as a guy who could beat up somebody twice his size.
No.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
No.
It's a tough sell. Yeah.
If he had gotten his ass kicked, but I would have believed it. But then they had to have the comeback where he just pops out of the side room and, you know, crashes.
He's so right. He should have really just gotten his ass beat. Yeah.
Yeah, instead he's like Chuck Norris and pops out, you know, suddenly aside.
Warren Bay need to drive out of a grave.
Yeah, pour some beer on himself and then jump at the deputy.
I think the catwalk finale's done well. I like how the would-be senator gets shot and he's driving around in his little golf cart and he slams into all the tables.
Yeah, I like that scene. The editing on that was really cool.
No, I'm generally curious about, because I think I have an idea what Hunter and John's opinion is. Stu, you didn't like it because it's a little slow or what?
I think it was slow, but then it just changed gears all of a sudden, and it really got weighed down by that middle part with the human engineering scene with the Parallax Corporation with that 10-minute sequence, which... I mean, honestly, I wanted to ask you boys, how effective do you think that was, that sequence? I mean, because as a viewer, you got to sit there and sit through all of it. Okay, I know it's human engineering, so it's akin to sort of the modern-day media manipulation by taking mother, father, happiness, me, and then twisting around the images.
Yeah.
It creeped me out because of the twisting of the images you mentioned. Like, it starts off innocently enough, and then when they bring back, when they reintroduce Mother again later into the video, it's like a Dust Bowl Mother. It's a little bit harsher, and yeah. then later they mix it in with sexuality, and it's just kind of. But then it also made me laugh when it said me, and there's Thor.
Yeah,
yeah, it's the Jack Kirby Thor right there.
I thought that sequence was unsettling. And I thought it was. I thought it worked. And like you said, though, what is it? It's just meant to bamboozle stupid people. And
exactly,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. For all we know, there's probably not even any pulse readers on that chair that they asked.
No, it's because at the end of the day, these are just fall guys, you know.
Right.
I wanted to question, why did he even join the Parallax Corporation?
Well, because he's a journalist. He's investigating. He wants to find out what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I got that, but yeah, I mean, going undercover and then actually killing people. Did he actually plant the bomb on that plane?
No. The assassin that was featured outside the plane as he got on it, that's the guy who planted the bomb. And then he cleverly got the message out there to the pilot without actually revealing who got the message to the pilot by writing on the napkin.
I like how he wrote on the mirror and then he opens the door and someone's there.
Yeah, that's a good sequence. I like that sequence. I was just like, oh, how's Beatty going to get out of this one? You know,
the only thing about that sequence where I was like, oh, come on, is when the plane blows up and they just shake the camera.
It was a cheap pop out. Yeah.
They saved a few bucks there.
Yeah, they would have been better off not having the plane blown up. Like the whole thing just gets the plot gets aborted. Just because obviously things didn't go well. So.
Yeah, because I just thought, oh, that's cheap, you know.
Yeah,
that was a big mistake. What I thought about the brainwashing scene is it's very of its time, because I remember there was a lot of movies and TV that had sequences like that, doing with the psychedelic, you know, constant flood of pictures and photos and that. So it's very 1974.
It was the Django Kill of Pacula movies.
Yes, it was. I mean, you see stuff like that on children's stuff, like The Electric Company. It was just kind of that weird manipulation of image.
Actually, speaking of that, I've just thought about it. How would this film have gone without Warren Beatty in it, but Charles Bronson?
Oh, Bronson would have taken it down.
Yeah, Beatty. The thing is, Bronson would not have gotten killed. He would have murdered all of them.
Yeah, he would have taken down Parallax single-handed.
And he would have gotten away with it.
He would have whipped Bill McKinney's ass for like the umpteenth time on camera.
He'd go, hey, pond scum.
Yes.
You're going to make me a patsy? Well, I'm going to make you dead.
He'd walk into their corporate room and go, no dice, Parallax. Kill them all. This ain't over. He'll say that at the end credits.
Mother, father, God, country, guns.
Jill Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jill Ireland would have been the doomed reporter.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
No, that would be asking too much from Jill. She would have been Joanne Harris.
Yeah, that's right. Joanne Harris walking out of the back room.
Hey, you get my wife in this picture.
Could you see him like asking you, Cronin, look, I need some money. How about $300? Give me an advance. An advance of my salary. I've got a story here.
You know what? This would have been a better movie.
I know. You know what? You put Jill Ireland in this picture, or I'm taking you out of the picture.
Yes. It'd have been like Telethon, basically, with some better visuals.
And that's not as good as it should be.
Yeah, Telethon's a real disappointment.
Yeah, the pedigree of that movie, Don Siegel, Charlie Bronson, this should have been way better.
Yeah, it should have been awesome, and it's just kind of like a TV movie.
Yeah, that's entering the period in his career where it's just like, oof, these movies, Love and Bullets is the nadir of the 70s. Well, no, what am I talking about? Cabo Blanco, I think, is 79. That's the worst.
I think it's 80.
Is it?
Love and Bullets is 79. Cabo Blanco is 80.
Okay, so. Yeah. No, Love and Bullets is
Telethon the same year as this one? 74?
No,
it's 76. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which I think White Buffalo came out in 76, so that's the better of the two that came out that year, right?
I think it was 77, because there was a big standee for White Buffalo in the theater lobby when I went to see Spy Who Loved Me with my parents.
You're right, 77, good memory.
Yeah.
Oh, Death Wish was 74, of course.
Right, made him the big American star. He was already a star everywhere else.
Yeah.
I got that Mad Magazine with Bronson on the cover for Death Wish. Yeah.
What I love about that cover is that they did not go all out with it.
Yeah, they kept Bronson looking like Bronson.
It's very subdued. It's good.
Tasteful.
Yeah.
Did they have Alfred E. Newman as one of the rapists today?
He looks like one.
He's running around with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Should be in a remake. Should be Alfred E. Newman and Marc Maron.
Yeah.
That's what rapists look like.
Bruce Willis. Yeah. I wouldn't stop Bruce Willis sleepwalking his way through that. God, that was terrible, that film. So bad.
That's the last, it seems to be the last big movie for Bruce. Big, and by big, I'm speaking very loosely.
Well, there's many rumored medical reasons for that.
Because he hasn't really done us.
You can Google him.
Yeah.
I'll tell you guys a better remake of Death Wish than the Bruce Willis one was the one that Jodie Foster did called
The Brave One.
The Brave One, that was it.
Yeah.
That was just basically a Death Wish film, but it was much better.
It was better than the Bruce Willis movie, I'd say that.
Yeah.
Well, they did the whole formula. She shoots somebody for the first time, she goes home, she vomits, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alfred E. Newman, actually, to get this back to Beatty, kind of looks like a Dick Tracy villain.
Yeah, he does.
Yes, he does. Yep.
You know who looks like Alfred E. Newman is Flat Top in the 1990 movie? Exactly.
Yeah.
He's got that face, you know, with all the makeup on.
Yeah.
Bill Forsyth really looks like Alfred E. Newman with a flat head.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Alfred E. Newman in Up the Academy.
Yeah.
Danny Singer film.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Yeah, press F, Robert Downey Sr. The shovel a line.
Yeah.
Stu,
And I was watching Up the Academy. I mentioned it when we did the Up the Academy review back in 1963, whenever we did it.
Yeah.
It feels like it. I remember sitting there eating this chicken vindaloo, and Alfred E. Newman came on the screen and went, "It is Alfred!" The fucking food went all over the floor. I wasn't expecting Alfred E. Newman in the film. Oh, it's Alfred! Sound like Dee Snider there for a second.
Were you sitting around with nothing to do, eating chicken vindaloo, and you just wanted something to do?
Says the Ramones.
You know what you sound like, Hunter? Sound like the Ramones.
Whenever I hear chicken vindaloo, I always think of that song.
Yeah.
On your Ramones show, I think I've listened to that twice probably. Your Pleasant Dreams reviews is very disappointing. I think that's a pretty good album.
What did we say?
I don't remember.
You don't care for it too much.
Yeah. It was okay. Is that the one that was done by the guy from 10cc?
Yeah, Graham Goldman.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I think we even said End of the Century wasn't very good.
Yeah, well, Pleasant Dreams
is better than End of the Century.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Sure. Yeah, I would totally say that.
I think most of their albums are better than End of the Century.
I think we said the last good Ramones album was Road to Ruin. That was it. The first four, yeah. Although there's one I do like, Halfway to Sanity.
Halfway to Sanity. Yeah.
That's one of the better ones. And Too Tough to Die I like as well. But yeah. Halfway to Sanity is my favorite of the post-Road to Ruin stuff.
I like a good portion of Brain Drain.
Has that got, I Believe, Miracles in it?
Yes. That one's super 80s sounding to me.
I like their remake or their cover of Palisades Park.
Yeah.
All that stuff. It's good.
Yeah, their covers were hit and miss. They're either good or yeah.
But Stu, Dick Tracy, the RKO movies, the four of them. You like those better than the 1990 movie?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I do like that 1991. And speaking of Dick Tracy, I saw in a small store that is near my work, they had a 4 or 5 disc Dick Tracy animated series from, geez, was it the 80s or 70s or something? I think it was 90s.
Maybe the 70s. I think you could see that on YouTube now. I tried watching them and I was, I wasn't like super impressed by it. But.
It was sort of similar to that. What was that really silly show with Paddlefoot? So it's in Pulp Fiction, where it's got basically a still image and it's just the mouth moves. It was similar.
Oh yeah, Clutch Cargo.
Clutch Cargo. Yeah.
Yeah. What that the Dick Tracy cartoon? I think it was 1960s, and it's rarely been seen in America since. Although I guess there's YouTube uploads.
I bought the complete Dick Tracy. Let me see. I'm looking at it over here. Volume 10. It's 44 to 45, which apparently is one of the best years. It's got flat top on the cover. I'm really into it. It's really good.
Yeah. Of those 4 Dick Tracy films, there was one that was really, I think it was called, what was the one that had Boris Karloff in it?
That's Gruesome, Meets Gruesome.
Yeah. I think that was my favorite a lot.
Yeah, they're enjoyable. I first saw them like many years ago and I thought that they opened pretty well and they ended pretty well. Especially that first one has a great scene, the climax where Tracy has a fist fight, a pretty decent one too, with whatever made up villain, Hugh Ball or whatever his name is. And a barge or in an abandoned steamboat. I don't know. And they kind of crash through walls and stuff. It's pretty exciting, but I don't know. Like the first one has a lot of crimes in suburbia and I just kind of want city stuff for Dick Tracy. I'd have to rewatch all those again.
I like the Republic serials. They're great. I think they're terrific. They're excellent. They're actually really, really good.
I remember I've got a box set and I've mentioned it before and it's, 50 movies for $5 in one of those massive box set things. And
mystery movies.
The 2 Shadow movies in there. I was so excited to watch them. Everyone who listens to this knows The Shadow is my favorite superhero of all time. And I watched them, and there's no fucking Shadow in there at all. It was like Iron Man 3. It was Iron Man 3 with no Iron Man, pretty much.
They're unwatchable. Is that the one with they're in New Orleans? Because that one's horrible.
Yeah, I think that was one of them.
Yeah, they did not know how to visualize that character in films at all.
I was so excited about the New Orleans location, and I was just like, this is awful stuff. What do you think about the 94 movie?
I like it. I really like it a lot.
Yeah, it's good.
That's the one film I can give Alec Baldwin a pass for.
That's a movie that, it's not very good, but I can probably watch that, 5 or 6 more times before I die. Like, no joke. Yeah.
I have said for the longest time they need to remake The Shadow with modern technology that they got now, where because The Shadow is obviously off screen and all you're hearing is a voice, you could utilize those surround speakers and have him coming from the left to the right to the back and really make it effective. But
it would be like a cool interactive thing without it being interactive. Yeah. But my concern with that though is this is a prejudice of mine. I'm just so turned off by CGI, and you know it's going to be heavy on that.
Okay, then what about an animated feature?
I'd be okay with that.
Right.
I mean, whatever. I'm just saying, in my personal, I know they're going to marvel it up is my problem.
The only director that could do it right is Sam Raimi, and he wanted the 94 gig and didn't get it. But he's actually a fan of the character and the radio shows and the pulp. But yeah, Darkman's got its Shadow references all over the place.
I like Darkman. Yeah.
But I don't know, swing it back to the parallax where we seem to have lost Hunter or he's just falling asleep.
Well, I tried to swing it back with Dick Tracy and then we got sidetracked.
But anyway, as I was getting back to the film, I just wanted to ask you how effective that middle piece seemed to be. It seems to be the central piece because it's the longest. And
it's the scene that I think it's semi-famous for. But John's right; nobody has actually probably seen the movie in a long time. It's one of those forgotten 70s classics sort of thing.
Well, Criterion put it out on Blu-ray recently, so someone's
Okay.
So it's it's, you know, it's being pushed somewhat.
It's one of those like B tier 70s classics, I think.
Yeah.
That's why I'd rank it.
It's a movie that I think people would describe it to you and they would not realize they're actually describing Blowout.
Right.
I like this better than Blowout.
Yeah. I like it more than Blowout too, but it's
I like Blowout.
I like Blowout more. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a De Palma guy, so
De Palma, I just devoured all that stuff when I was younger, and then going back to it, it's kind of rough.
Yeah, it's same here because this stuff was on HBO all the time in the 80s. Like they push the Palma movies because you knew you were gonna see everything. You'd get some nudity, you'd get graphic violence, and everything was perfect pay cable fare.
I don't want to see Body Double again because I love it and I fear that it's going to disappoint me.
We need to try to get the guy who wrote that on the show again.
Yeah?
Yeah, because we tried to get him on, but he was about to have surgery when we did Body Double, and he was like, I can't do it.
Yeah, he was interested though, right?
Yeah. He seemed to be interested. He was like, oh, you know, sorry, I wish I could make it. But that was a few years ago. He's pretty old, I think.
Yeah.
I have to skip that one. I didn't particularly like it a great deal.
You didn't like Body Double?
Not really. Didn't care much for Bill Maher being in the film.
Nobody likes Bill Maher in that movie.
No. I mean, it was okay, but the whole Frankie Goes to Hollywood sequences, I thought was just, it's just stupid.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I might not like it upon second viewing. I do want to see the Kirk Douglas one again. I want to see the Fury again, and maybe I'll watch Sisters again, but I think
Sisters does not hold up. The beginning of that movie is really good, and then after that initial murder, when it pulls a psycho, then it gets pretty boring, I thought.
Well, he was always chasing that psycho.
Yeah. Hit. That's how I feel about the Michael Caine one, where the opening Angie Dickinson stuff is great, and then like that giallo murder in the elevator, and then the movie just, I don't know. I figured out the twist pretty quickly too.
Right. Yeah. It's not hard to pick up on what it is. But yeah, Sisters, I remember really liking it the first time I saw it. And then when I watched it a second time, I was like, oh, I don't really like this.
Yeah. That's my favorite Brian De Palma film.
Hold on. Snake Eyes.
Nope.
Phantom of the Paradise.
Nope. Greetings.
Oh yeah, that's right. I knew that. I knew you love the De Niro stuff.
Yeah, the Greetings and Hi Mom. Yeah, I've got
that De Niro and De Palma box set.
I wanted to get it, and now it's gone.
Do you like De Niro now?
Nope. Okay. Nope. And they said, I was listening to Coach Greg Adams on YouTube. I was watching one of his videos, and De Niro these days is basically doing films because his wife is just commanding, or ex-wife is commanding thousands and thousands out of him each month. He's about $3 or $4 million in debt to the IRS as well.
So. It almost makes me feel bad for him. Almost, I said.
Nope. Yeah, he's punchy. I don't feel bad for him.
He did it to himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. When do you think was the tipping point? When did he just go down the big drop off? Because I think he was still fun to watch on something like
Meet the Parents.
Okay, Meet the Parents. Okay, well there you go. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, Meet the Parents. He's fun.
Rocky and Bullwinkle. That was it.
It's bad, but he still had some gas in the tank after that. Meet the Fockers was where he just didn't care anymore. I think he was just hammering checks. Because look, he did Rocky and Bullwinkle in like what,
2000.
Okay, so he did Rocky and Bullwinkle, then he did Meet the Parents. He did Animal.
When he did about the Luc Besson movie?
Which one is that?
Yeah.
The Family, him and Michelle Pfeiffer, the Italians that moved to France.
That was like, hold on.
Does Michelle Pfeiffer put on stiletto heels and shoot everybody up?
That was 2013.
Yeah. Okay.
2013.
Look up for me, please, somebody. What was the film that he did around 2006?
Okay. The Good Shepherd?
No, it was
Stardust.
House. No, he was in an old house or something.
And an old, oh, is it the horror film Hide and Seek or whatever?
Yeah, it might have been that. And then he did another film directly after it, which was exactly the same film. It was scene for scene the same thing.
I'm looking at Hide and Seek, and the only thing that could maybe compete with that, only because I don't know what happens in Stardust, is Stardust.
Stardust is a fantasy movie. It's like, yeah, it's okay. it's like Princess Bride or something.
Isn't something called Godsend? What the hell is this?
Oh, that's
that's it.
But there were two. Oh no, they were back to back. 2004 is Godsend, and then Hide and Seek was the next year.
Right.
You know what? I don't know, Stu. You might be right, because after Rocky and Bullwinkle, you got Meet the Parents. But after that, you know, it's a bunch of crap nobody remembers between
Showtime.
Oh my God, Showtime! I forgot all about that. Then the sequel to Analyze This. Then, oh fuck, Righteous Kill. I completely forgot
that was
just like, oh, we got De Niro and Pacino. Come see it.
What did De Niro do after Goodfellas and Awakenings?
Goodfellas, he did Backdraft, Cape Fear. He did Mad Dog and Glory. Anybody remember that movie?
I remember that weird thing.
Blockbuster. Just McThurman's naked in it. That's the only reason I did it.
Yeah, it's also by the director. It's by the director of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
I'll tell you what. If his was the remake of Where No Angels with Sean Penn, I didn't mind that one. That was alright.
He also did Bronx Tale. He did Frankenstein. Remember that
Bronx Tale? Oh yeah. My God.
Frankenstein, which was a total piece of crap.
Yeah, I saw that at the theaters.
Never saw it.
Oh, it's awful. Right. Casino. Heat, The Fan, Sleepers. Copland.
Yeah, he plays the district attorney or something. Or
that was like Stallone's big comeback movie, Copland.
That would be the last good one he did. That was about, what, 97?
He did Jackie Brown after that. I like that.
He did
Wag the Dog, which was good.
That was good.
Robin's Room.
He did Ronin. Remember Ronin?
I don't like Ronin. I don't know why everybody likes it.
it's a mess.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And Analyze This. I like Analyze This.
That was a hit, yeah.
Analyze That sucks, but Analyze This is good.
There was one more he did with Philip Seymour Hoffman. That was the last one. I'm pretty sure he was in that with him. Flawless, it was called. Is that
Right? Yeah, Flawless was 99.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So 2000, the Rocky and Bullwinkle one, and I'm a massive Rocky and Bullwinkle fan, but my God, that film was bad. That was where it started to, he basically dipped off. So really the last 20 years.
Yeah. I like Meet the Parents. I think it's funny.
Meet the Parents is good, but.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
What about Grudge Match? You guys like Grudge Match?
The war with Grandpa, guys. Come on.
Hey, he's back, Grandpa.
The premise of that movie is fraudulent because Stallone is a jacked up freak whilst Robert De Niro has done nothing to keep up his body.
Yeah.
Just like Stallone will pummel him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Gentropin in his body would do it.
Yeah.
Knock that old man out.
Yeah.
So, Hunter, I'm just asking you, a question. Do I just cut out the Parallax View stuff for this and just make it all Phil and O'Killer Part 3?
No, keep it as Parallax View. We talked about it enough, I think.
There's a surprising little amount to talk about the Parallax View, even though it's a movie I enjoyed. But, I mean, it kind of is what it is.
It's minimalist. It's really so minimalist.
Convoluted. That sequence after the human engineering, the Parallax Corporation thing, is just... It just felt like a film of two halves, pretty much.
It does have a tonal shift, which I'm not against, nor am I not unfamiliar with, so it didn't really bother me.
Yeah, it didn't bother me either.
For me, it just didn't work.
Well, for me, I thought it was a good 70s paranoid thriller. I enjoyed it. I thought it was politically interesting. I love the cinematography. And it didn't go where I thought it was going to go. I thought having this conspiracy to get patsies, I think that's really interesting and cool. So yeah, I enjoyed it. If I was gonna rate this thing, I would give it an 8 out of 10.
Ooh. Yeah, the only contrived thing for me is, of course, its ending. It's a 70s downer ending. You know it's gonna be a downer ending before you even start it up. That was just, I saw that coming a mile away. I didn't know how it was going to happen, but I knew this guy's not going to make it out of this web of intrigue. But besides that, I think it's a very enjoyable movie. Know what you're getting into. The first third is, it won't surprise you if you're listening to this since we talked about it. But if you're going in cold, it will surprise you. And then it will turn into something that you expected. But then I think there's enough good sequences in the slow moving parts that I think it's an entertaining movie. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10.
John, what about you?
I give it a 7 out of 10. It's a really solid conspiracy film, but and it also has that vibe of paranoia, I think, established better than most. Like, especially when Paula Prentice plays the reporter that's his former lover that comes to talk to him and says she's next. And the very next scene, it's her corpse.
I thought that was
like
really
the scene just gets cut off. Like their conversation just kind of, it doesn't really have an ending.
It well, it's
just,
like we all know she's dead. Let's just get there. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, I thought it was kind of effective.
It actually gives a hint of mystery. Like perhaps maybe everybody's paranoid about this. That's why I'm not so much into the sandwich being poisoned scene by his boss. Like I'd rather him had just turned up dead.
Yeah.
As opposed to seeing, okay, here's the guy dressed up as the delivery man.
Yeah, that was telegraphed for sure. It's like the guy, William McKean, turns to the camera and is like, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah, he almost winks at the camera.
What would you give it, Stu?
I gave it a 5.
Okay. It's not bad. It's average.
No. Average, yeah.
It's an average film. It's not a bad film. It's a very un-Warren Beatty-like film.
What would be the quintessential Warren Beatty-like film? Bullworth?
No, probably Dick Tracy is what he's known for. Bugsy or Dick Tracy?
Ishtar. I think Bugsy seems quintessentially Warren Beatty.
It does, yeah.
I have to see that.
Well, it's written by James Toback, so you know it's good.
We didn't talk about The Gambler. That's good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we should do a James Toback show so we can just make tons of jokes about him creeping on women.
And no lessons.
James Toback.
We should
I'll tell you what we should do. Eric, are you able to come back next week?
Yeah, sure.
You want to do Death Wish 4?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Hell yeah. Let's do Death Wish 4. It's my favorite one.
Are we talking,
it is the best one.
Wednesday, obviously, I guess.
Well, Wednesday's only because I threw everyone out. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I get you. Yeah, no, Death Wish 4, of course. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Death Wish 4 is a definite one.
Yeah.
Well, we'll sort of time after the fact, or as time in a day. But, if you want to come back next week, Eric, we'll do Death Wish 4.
Sounds good.
Yeah. It looks like it's on Prime, so I can just rewatch. I'll probably enjoy rewatching it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a movie. Talk about.
It's an opportunity to see Kate Lins again.
Kate Lins, Dana Barron's not bad looking herself. Yeah.
And Danny Trejo blows up.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo has the best role in a Danny Trejo in a Charlie Bronson movie, except for maybe when he threatens anal rape at the end of Kinjite. That's about it.
All right, guys.
Danny Trejo.
Save it for the show. All right, guys. I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
Yeah, peace out.
Well, good night.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.